and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 23rd, 2023. Human Rights Watch is calling on the UN Security Council to impose sanctions on military and militia leaders responsible for the killings in Darfur.
Individual targeted sanctions against individuals, commanders of security forces, allied militias who are responsible for some of the most serious attacks, including killings of civilians, including burning of civilian property.
And a senior South Sudanese church leader is charged for alleged unlawful marriage and child neglect.
The parents of the plaintiff's daughter were saying, "We have been promised by the dependent to marry our daughter, and it has now been, it has been a 10 years period of time."
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Doctors Without Borders, known by its French acronym MSF, is appealing for funding to help more than 100,000 people fleeing from the conflict in Sudan. Jocelyn Yapi is the head of MSF's mission in South Sudan. She expressed to VOA Nabil Biagio how the conditions in which individuals fleeing Sudan's violence find themselves, and they need urgent water, food, and shelter.
So this is more than 100,000 people entering since the crisis in Sudan, as now in need of basic assistance. We're talking about shelter, food, safe drinking water, health services, and any other assistance like protection, including the need that people are to. We can also include in this the condition of the people coming from Sudan. Basically, they are mostly South Sudanese. Around 90% of people are South Sudanese, and they fled the area with nothing, barely nothing. There are some have been facing some challenges in terms of security along the way, and they arrived traumatized, exhausted, and some with existing medical condition.
The transit center in Arank, where people fleeing Sudan arrive, receives roughly 1,000 arrivals a day. What kind of strain does that put on local resources, the local resources of this small border town?
Yes, the system already in South Sudan is overstretched in terms of humanitarian assistance. Those community coming, or those people coming from Sudan, adding a strain on the water supply. We need water. We need to have a safe drinking water. We need also health services in the system which are already in dire condition. So what we observe now is the maintenance system which was already existing in rank is not up to the level of the need of double the population that is now in rank.
Of course, that goes both for the arrivals and the host community as well. And other areas like Madakal, the capital of Upper Nile State, Awil in northern Bahar Ghazal State, all the way to the capital Juba, where you are, have been taking in arrivals from Sudan as well. Tell me more about where these arrivals end up settling and what help they receive there.
So the response to this Sudan crisis is the influx of people has been organized into points of entry from various areas, but the most major one is Rank. But after people transiting from Malakal and being dispatched into various locations in the country, like in Juba. As I mentioned for Rank as well, the condition in Malakal, in other parts of the country, is already overstretched in terms of the assistance to get this influx of people.
And what is MSF and other humanitarian partners, what are they doing to help these refugees and returnees? And what resources do you have at your disposal to help them? Do you have enough resources?
As of now, MSF is supporting these returnees and refugees into health services via mobile clinic in Rank, in three different settlements, and also doing water supply, safe water supply, taking water from the river, taking and distributing to those communities. We also set a means of isolation. That's a place where we take all the complicated measure cases. Our partners are supporting also the activities, providing shelter, food, but the need is more than what the capacity is as of now.
Do you have an appeal for more funding?
Yes, we call upon the humanitarian community today to scale up and coordinate a response to address this increasing need. Basic needs are today to be met, but also the onward movement, meaning to organize better the onward movement to give dignified conditions for the people living who left Sudan and are looking for a better place to stay in.
That was the MSF's head of mission in South Sudan, Jacqueline Yappi. He spoke with VOA's Nabil Biagio earlier today from the Sudanese capital, Juba. Authorities in Unity State have set up a transit camp to host tens of thousands of returnees and Sudanese asylum seekers after they fled from Sudan. The executive director for the Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in Unity State says 11,000 returnees have arrived from Sudan and are being integrated into communities in the area. For VOA News, Rith Nyak Jok reports from Bantu.
John Juan Bumza, executive director for Relief and Rehabilitation Commission in United States, says 300 returnees or refugees arrive daily in United States. He says the state government has deployed officials at Rupkani, Adok, Kutch, and many counties to receive more returnees or refugees who will be resettled at Roria, Ribial Nunas, Lalo.
They come empty-handed, even some possessing some challenges of health, because even some of them are being exposed to disappointments. Some of them are even injured. They need an attention, close or intimate attention, urgent one, of health intervention activities, so that even these survivors of harassment are also taken care of, such that if there are rape cases, they are traced and treated so that contagious diseases do not affect them.
Bom say the state government has a limited resource for supporting the vulnerable people. He's appealing to the aid agency to respond to the need of the returnees or refugees arriving from Sudan.
We are lobbying, we are advocating for more humanitarian donation. This situation needs at least extra funding that may respond and fulfill the gaps in form of an emergency response, rather than the routine response or the routine humanitarian operations which used to be here since the creation of this state.
Peter Banda, a worried, the chief of UN Office for Migration in South Sudan, say aid agency are stretched to their limit due to lack of funds.
We have a challenge, which is that our humanitarian response, which was put together before we have additional people arriving in the country, is only funded up to 30%. So that means that we have limited resources for everyone in South Sudan that requires humanitarian assistance, and that also goes for the returnees. So the colleagues on the ground in Unity State and in other locations are doing their best to respond as quickly as possible with the required humanitarian assistance.
He says there is an influx of returnees and refugees, as wasn't already the dire humanitarian situation in South Sudan.
It's important to realize that we need additional resources to respond to the impact of the Sudan crisis inside South Sudan, because otherwise we will have to reduce our humanitarian assistance for the existing populations to be able to care for the new populations that are arriving.
I would say the United Nations is transporting some of the returnees to their final destination. He says the UN also provides protection to some of the returnees and refugees. For BO News, I'm Liel Nyaja, reporting from Bantu, United States.
Still on conflict-related matters, Human Rights Watch has accused the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces and allied Arab militias of attacking non-Arab communities in West Darfur. The rights watchdog is calling on the UN Security Council to impose targeted sanctions and other punitive measures on military commanders and leaders of the militia responsible for abuses committed in Darfur. For VOA News, Michael Atit reports from Juba.
Leticia Beder, Human Rights Watch Deputy Director in the African Division, says she is concerned about the continued fighting in Sudan and the targeted ethnic killing in Al Janina of West Darfur State. Speaking to VOA via messaging application from Rome, Beder says Human Rights Watch is worried about reports and evidence of serious abuses taking place in West Darfur. She called on the UN Security Council and other international bodies to adopt urgent measures for protecting communities affected by the violence in Darfur.
Individual targeted sanctions against individuals, commanders of security forces, allied militias, who are responsible for some of the most serious attacks, including killings of civilians, including burning of civilian property, should be sanctioned. But this has to form part of a much more broader, comprehensive response.
VOA reached out to RSF's Special Advisor for Foreign Affairs, Ibrahim Mukhair, for comment on this story, but he said he was still reviewing the report and would get comment later. Sudan's Doctors' Union reported that 1,100 people have died in the West Darfur capital of Al Janina since mid-April when the RSF and allied Arab militia attacked ethnic and self-defense militia in Al Janina town. Human Rights Watch officials called on the warring parties and allied militias to end attacks on civilians and guarantee safe access to aid agencies and families fleeing from the violence. The rights watchdog says members of the UN Security Council should do more to deter further killings in Sudan.
We've obviously seen meetings happening on Sudan, but we have seen no concrete action taken from the level of the Security Council. There is a key role for the Security Council to play in preventing further abuses and atrocities from happening in Darfur.
Beder says Human Rights Watch believes the decision to end the mandate of the peacekeeping mission in Darfur was wrong.
We had raised the alarm of the decision by the international community to pull out peacekeeping forces from Darfur at a time where the alarm bells were already ringing, and communities there, and especially communities from displaced communities, had already been warning that pulling out peacekeeping forces would leave them incredibly vulnerable.
Last year, West Darfur experienced the highest rates of food insecurity in Sudan. The United Nations says nearly 2 million people have been displaced in Sudan since the conflict started on April 15th, and about 150,000 have fled to Chad. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a court in Juba presses charges on a senior church leader. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A court in Juba has charged an Anglican bishop on Thursday for an illegal marriage and child neglect. Moses Awan accused Bishop David Akau Kwal of the Diocese of Awirial in the Episcopal Church of South Sudan of having unlawful relations with his daughter for nearly 12 years. For VOA News, Dengai Deng has details from Bor.
Reverend David Akau Kwal, the diocesan bishop of Awerial, appeared before a Juba County Court judge Thursday to answer charges including unlawful marriage and child neglect. Alpayo Manyang, the archbishop of Eastern Varel Gazal Internal Province of Episcopal Church of South Sudan, lifted Kwal's immunity last week to allow court proceedings in the case. Complainant Amos Awan filed a lawsuit against Bishop Kwal for allegedly engaging in an unlawful relationship with his daughter for nearly 12 years. Philip Manyog is Awan's lawyer. He says the accused has a 10-year-old girl child with his client's daughter. Manyog alleges that Bishop Kwal has done very little to care for the child and her mother.
The parents of the plaintiff's daughter were saying, We have been promised by the dependent to marry our daughter. And it has now been, it has been a 10 years period of time. So what we need from now is to let our daughter be married by him. Give us our bride price and take your wife. He refused to do that. This is where the court procedures start.
The Juba County Court adjourned the case to July 5th for another hearing. When contacted for comments, Bishop Kwal had this to say.
I'm busy right now.
Bishop Kwal's defense lawyer Joseph Diardit says his client's legal team is studying the charges in the case before making a statement.
We went yesterday and the lawyer of the plaintiff applied to the court that they should be given 2 weeks in order to do the amendment. So we are waiting for their amendment. Even though we were ready to give them our reply, so we couldn't make it. We will be seeing the petition and then we will reply based on the information in the petition.
Jacob Mabor is the Dean of Minkaman Cathedral in Awerial Diocese. Mabor says the charges are fictitious with intention to harm the good name of Bishop Kwal.
The accusations are not true. These are people who decided to defame the bishop, and anything like that has not happened. All the elders in Awerial are saddened by what happened in the diocese.
Bishop Kwal is married and has 6 children who are currently living in Australia. If found guilty, he could be sentenced to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 2 years. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng in Juba.
South Sudan's Minister of Finance says the country's oil production will drop from 150,000 to 130,000 barrels per day next year. A technical advisor at the Ministry of Petroleum says the government is conducting aerial survey in Jonglei State to identify new sites for oil production. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
South Sudan's finance minister, Dier Tong Ngor, told lawmakers in Juba this week that some oil wells in the country have dried up. Ngor says the country will experience a huge drop in oil production next year.
The total oil production is projected at 132,362 barrels per day in the fiscal year 2023-2024, down from 150 barrels per day in the fiscal year 2022-2023. The projected reduction of 17,638 barrels per day in oil production is due to depletion of some oil wells.
In an exclusive interview with VOA in Juba Friday, Awol Daniel Chuang, the technical advisor at the Ministry of Petroleum, says oil fields in Unity and Upper Nile states are worn out due to many years of oil production in the areas.
The current production that we are having in South Sudan in three blocks, Block 5A, and then Block 1, 2, and 4, and then Block 3 and 7. Okay, these are the blocks that are producing in South Sudan. They started to produce a long time ago, since 1997. And then, over the years, there's what we call natural decline. Because you understand that, fossil fuels and hydrocarbons resources are non-renewable, and also they are available in certain quantities. Yeah, so as you produce, they will decline. They will decline every year until it will deplete one day.
Blocks 1, 2, 4, and 5A are located in Unity State, while Block 3 and 7 are in Upper Nile State. Chuang says Block 5A in Unity State is about to dry up. The technical advisor adds that the government has contracted a strategic fuel fund, a South African company, to start fresh oil exploration at new oil fields located in Jonglei State.
This block B2 is big. It's a big block that covers almost like 4 states. Yeah, but it is mainly in Jonglei. So the exercise that we have done yesterday is actually to make people on the ground aware. To tell them that we are starting an aerial or airborne geophysical survey.
French oil company Total and Moldovan oil firm Eskom pulled out from Jonglei State after a series of violent conflicts in South Sudan. Chuang predicts that it will take about 6 years for South Africa's Strategic Fuel Fund to produce oil at Block B2, located in Jonglei State.
There's no drilling. There's no drilling. What happens first is only gravity and magnetic mapping. We are only using the plane. Nobody will be on the ground. The aircraft will just be flying over the area just to pick out the data, geophysical data, which is gravity and magnetic. But to be on the ground, it will take maybe another 6 months or so for them. When you are making exploration, does not mean that you want to start it tomorrow, but it's for you to understand what do you have.
In the 2023-2024 fiscal year budget proposal presented before the parliament this week, oil revenues account for 84% of the total budget spending. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayor in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Uganda, where refugees at Palorinya's settlement are reporting high number of suicide deaths and suicide attempts by people who have lived there. Organizations and individuals who work with the refugees, who are mainly from South Sudan, say denial of food and failure to meet basic needs are the main causes. Halima Athumani reports from Odongi District, Uganda.
Since the start of this year, the Lutheran World Federation, a non-profit working with refugees in the Palorinya settlement in Uganda's Obongi district, has recorded one suicide and 20 attempts by refugees. 18-year-old James Wubam came to Palorinya with his uncle. He says his uncle's wife would deliberately deny him food. He also said he found it difficult to ask his uncle for basic needs, including school requirements. He doesn't have any siblings to share these issues with, and this has put him in a deep depression. He says, I thought of hanging myself. I went to a local club with my friends and consumed some alcohol. When I got home, I contemplated suicide. According to the Lutheran World Federation, between January and September 2019, Palorinya recorded the most suicide cases of all refugee settlements in Uganda, with 29 suicides attempted and 13 completed. In 2022, the Federation says one suicide and 45 attempted suicides were reported in the settlement. Isaac Oturi, a clinical psychologist with the Lutheran World Federation, says most of the 20 suicide attempts so far this year involved young people triggered by unmet needs.
In a settlement here, people are, their hands are tied. You survive only on given items. Now you can't make it for yourself. Now to make it worse is that even those who are in position to work, there's very few or less or minimal livelihood opportunities that would help them to earn a better living.
Of the more than 1.5 million refugees in Uganda, most of whom come from South Sudan, Palorinya hosts 123,000. In July, the World Food Programme will begin targeting food and cash aid to refugees best on need. Fearing they'll be left to fend for themselves, some refugees have considered suicide. Michael Gale said that when he found out that his name was listed under those whose families would not get food, his wife left him. Left to fend for four children, he contemplated a quick escape.
They can call you Baba, but they know to eat now, no food now, no anything now. Me, I cannot even go to get labor from some people now. I'm at one place like this. Now things will go to my heart. That better for me to calm myself.
To ensure each case is attended to in time, agencies have set up para-counselors, also known as suicide gatekeepers. Para-counselor Dianga Betty Kenyi says they have to depend on second parties to get help for those attempting suicide.
The neighbor will run to us and give us that information. And then we go and access how the client is.
With little funding and just one clinical psychologist in the settlement, many victims do not get the support they need. Halima Athmani for VA News, Obongi District, Uganda.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comments. Take it away, Nabil.
Thank you, John. This South Sudan in Focus fan says, hello, John Tanza and Nabil. I am Peter Garquath at the University of Juba. I would like to appreciate the government of Unity State for considering the suffering of the people of Unity State in Upper Nile by transporting them freely to their respective areas across the state. Keep that spirit and may God bless you. John Albert Badiangomo from Yambio of Western Equatoria State says, hello, VOA. I condemn the killing of Governor of West Darfur State. Let the perpetrators for the killing of Governor Khamis Abdullah be held accountable. I urge the authorities of Sudan to dialogue and bring everlasting peace to the entire peoples of Sudan. James Ray Majok from Bantu Town says, hi, Nabil Biajo and John Tanza. As a Unity State citizen, my worry is about commodities and stocks inside Bantu Town. Our traders are no longer having available stocks and commodities for everyone to buy, while there are more returnees who are coming back home from Khartoum. I don't know for these coming months how people of Unity State will survive this difficult situation. Aligo Jueli in Arua, Uganda writes, hello, VOA South Sudan in Focus. I appreciate your program, which allows listeners to air out their views across the country. The post of president is too hard for our president, Salva Kiir. That's why he showed violence instead of peace. He failed to implement the 2018 peace agreement because he wanted to stay in power, whereby he talked about peace while he aimed a problem. One day, the soldiers will turn the guns on the president. Thanks. Samuel Remo in Yai says, hi, John Tanza and Nabil Biaju. The returning of consignments of food at Numuli Uganda border by Bureau of Statistics staff is good work done. We, the employees who work for the South Sudan government, should not be bribed by any trader who is doing business in our country because of money. But let us think of our brothers who had sacrificed their lives. This listener says, hello, good evening, VOA. Call me Aligo John in Numuli. Bravo to the USA government for issuing sanctions against the South Sudanese officials. We request USA to impose more sanctions on government officials in South Sudan. Peter Gonyonyang Majongdul in Block 3 of Bortown says, as the world commemorated World Refugee Day under the theme Home Away from Home, I applauded the role played by humanitarian agencies and the hosting governments and rendered to all people uprooted by conflicts in their countries. And finally, this fan says, hi, John and Nabil. I am John Bosco from Yei. I'm requesting the commissioner of Yei River County, Mr. Agri Cyrus Kenyekwa, to pay a solidarity visit to Lutaya Residential Area and see for himself the level of destruction of houses that has taken place in Lutaya. 90% of the houses are roofless now, and the security agencies next to Lutaya have done nothing about it to apprehend the looters. I wish he comes and acts accordingly. Thanks so much. The views expressed here do not reflect the views of VOA or of this program. We appreciate hearing from all of you. Keep those comments coming.
And I will repeat, keep your comments brief, and we shall sample some of them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with Jamnazi Africa and the song I Am Not Sober. I'm your sober host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit VOA Africa for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Mark, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.